Welcome to Virtual Breakfast. For those of you who have not joined yet this year, you'll kind of see how the flow of things go. My name is Eric Anderson. I am a field crops educator down in the southwest part of the state. I'll be hosting today. I'm going to start just a little bit early just to get a few of the logistical things out of the way. Give Manny and Jeff full time this morning. So, the collection of demographic data from program participants is an important and mandated aspect of all Michigan State University Extension programming. It's voluntary. Information that you provide will not be used in any way to identify you personally, but rather as an anonymous member that participated in the group. We're going to go ahead and put up a poll right now. Please take a moment to answer the questions in the poll. We'll come back in about a minute or so. So again, just a couple of housekeeping things. For those of you who have joined, please mute yourself during the presentations. And if your video is on, feel free to leave it on or turn it off. Please sign in with your first and last name. So when you see your icon, if it just says, Big Bob's iPhone or something like that, and you will be requesting RUP credits. We definitely need you to go in and rename yourself. So just click on the participant list icon, find your name, and then you can rename yourself. Throughout the morning, we'll have questions through our chat box. So for either Manny or Jeff, feel free to plop those in anytime, and then we'll handle all of the questions at the end for our Q&A. So first up this morning is going to be Dr. Manny Singh. He is our cropping systems agronomist. He's going to talk about some planting decisions that you all are going to be making here, or that you probably already have made for this year. So Manny, I'm going to stop sharing and you can take it away.
All right. Thanks, Eric. Good morning, everyone. Hopefully, you had a good start to your day. All right. So, as Eric said, we're going to talk about, a few decisions you can make at this time of the year to improve your yield potential, right? And the first thing I want to talk about is the planting time. Year in, year out, that's one factor that we have seen is helping us the most in developing the canopy. That's maximizing the interception of sunlight, right? That's our goal, to maximize yield potential. And you can see in these pictures here, the crops we are able to plant towards end of April have closed their canopy. They are maximizing that sunlight interception relatively early in the growing season, right? Compared to if you see pictures on the right side, that's where we are delayed. We are behind. You can still see open canopy, lower yield potential can also result in high weed pressure, as well as a loss in soil moisture from evaporation and things like that. And these data typically leads to impacts on yield. And I will show you a couple of yield graphs here, and then we'll talk about what does this all mean, right? The basic theme here is that planting time for us here in Michigan does impact our yield potential, unlike some of the I states down south, where they have a little longer growing season. This picture is for soybean, again, planting time on x-axis and then relative yield, so percent of maximum on the y-axis. And I have a same one for corn planting as well, right? Let's break these into this early, mid, and late season planting times, right? And if we look at these pictures, a couple of things pop up. Number one, these curves are not linear. You have probably seen numbers, a delay in planting cause half a bushel decline in yield per day. It's not as simple as that. It depends on the time of the year, right? Early on, in mid-May to end of May, the loss is less than 0.5% or so. And as we go into June, then we start losing more than 1% of our yield potential. The next thing you will notice here is that during the early part, right? What is the timely planting, or impacts of early planting? On the soybean side, you can see there's a sort of a plateau curve, right? That during this early planting time, and you can see there's different years here, including these big blue dots for the last growing season, that, yeah, we did not lose our yield potential, right? That we are able to extend our planting window if we are pushing towards some of these early plantings in soybeans, starting again around April 20th or so. So pretty much we are getting there as of now, right? And then we start losing yield, right? So you can see the impact of these early planting times as well as the impact of weather, right? Because weather does trump, you know, a lot of things what we can do. But for the most part, we are able to maintain these high yield potentials, if not improve them with these early planting conditions. Now, if you look on the corn side of things, here as we were pushing towards these early plantings, you know, into early end of April, we did lose our yield potential compared to some of these early May planting times. And that to me is important. The corn plant seems not to like these non-ideal field conditions, right? It likes good field conditions. It likes the uniform emergence, you know, everything at V2, you know. So optimal field conditions is important. Good seed placement using, you know, good planting equipment seems to be more critical for corn compared to beans. So something to keep in mind. If we want to compare these two, let's look at this figure. Here are same data, but I've combined them into the same figure, right? And let's start again with corn with these orange dots. And you can see again, as we were pushing towards these early planting, we did lose our yield potential, more so in this 2023 growing season last year when we were under those drought conditions, you know, and the corn was already developing its yield components and did not like it. So you can see our optimal planting time for corn, and this is data from Lansing area, right? It'll change a little bit, you know, as we go south a little earlier and move north, you know, a little later. But you can see the optimal planting window here in South Central Michigan was around early May or so, right? And then as we get delayed, we start losing yield pretty quickly. If you look on the soybean side, you can see that our optimal was a little bit ahead of what we saw for corn. And you see this long plateau here. That sort of shows again the potential of a soybean plant to deal with some of these non-ideal early season field conditions, right? And even maybe if we are trying to compete, you know, for the same equipment in corn versus beans, maybe using an equipment that might lead to non-ideal seed placement, but a soybean plant is able to compensate by branching out, things like that, while a corn plant is not able to, right? Something to keep in mind as we get into our planting season. This soybean data, again, coming from our small plot work, right? So we have done a lot of on-farm trials as well based on the interest in early season soybean plantings. And what I mean by early planting here is again, end of April, and I'll show you some insurance dates. And we are not talking ultra early, where folks are planting early April. You know, they probably have some beans already in ground. So that's not what we are focusing on. In here, you can see we almost did these on-farm trials comparing typical planting around mid-May or so to this, you know, about 3 weeks earlier than that. And for the most part, we did end up improving our yield potential anywhere from 2 to 7, 8 bushels over multiple years, multiple locations, right? Shows the potential of these early planting scenarios in beans. But if you look on towards the right side of this graph, you do see some implications of these early plantings, right? We can lose our yield potential. And that comes back to, you know, this, there are potential rewards, but there are risks associated with some of these early season soybean plantings, right? As we have been talking, you know, at a minimum, planting soybeans early in the growing season is extending your planting window. So you are minimizing the yield penalty that can come from a delay in planting, right? Additionally, we have seen, again, I was showing you data where we are able to improve our yield potential just by planting early. And I'll show you more data showing, you know, we might be able to change other management to improve upon that yield potential, right? So definitely some potential rewards, benefits there. But again, it's not as simple, right? There are risks out there. And you all probably have seen, you know, planting beans early can lead to poor germination emergence if we have non-ideal field conditions. And I will talk about that. You know, that can cause again this imbibitional injury, insect disease pressure, crusting based on our field conditions. Freeze damage is a real concern too. And as you can see in this picture, soybean plants are sometimes able to recover from it. Even if the apical meristem is frosted, you can see these two nice branches coming out in this picture that can lead to, again, improved or similar yield potential, right? Another thing to keep in mind is crop insurance coverage for replanting. We have worked with the risk management agency, and these dates were updated recently. So please look at this figure. I have a link down here that takes to our website where we have a full-blown article on this. But you can see those dates changes as you move from south to north in Michigan. So something to keep in mind from replanting perspective as well. In terms of, again, coming back to the optimal time, as I have been showing you the data, in here in South Central Michigan, it starts around end of April. And then the question becomes, you know, what to plant first? You know, what's the right planting order? Beans versus corn. And I, as I've shown you data, you know, to me, number one aspect is the field conditions. Based on our rotation, you know, we ought to be looking for field conditions and see if conditions are right. And we'll talk about that here in a second. And then also look at the equipment availability, right? As I have talked to you, know, soybeans seem to be more forgiving in terms of non-ideal seed placement. It's good to have good seed placement, but corn cares more about that. And soybeans are more forgiving with some of these early season non-ideal field conditions. So something to keep in mind. What are those field conditions looking like? Let's look at that, you know. Number one is temperature. We used to think that's probably the more important one, but it's the other way around now. But let's get this one out of the way. So optimal soil temperature is still critical. The rule of thumb we used to give out is 50 degrees and with a good forecast, right? I believe the number is a little lower than that, especially for beans. It's probably in mid-40s or so with these new genetics we have. We are actively looking to find or update these recommendations, so stay tuned. But it's probably below 50 now. And you can see last week, we were still hovering across the state in low to mid-40s. But this past week, we have been pretty much into 50s. You can see pretty much across the state, even in northern lower. That was a surprise to me. I don't think I've seen that in previous years. So it's showing that over the years, I think we are getting these relatively warmer soil temperatures earlier in the season, giving us a potential to be able to plant early, right? And if we do plant in low temperature conditions, what can happen, right? So, well, it's the imbibitional chilling injury, right? That can lead to slow emergence. So something to keep in mind. A lot of sensors are out there to record this. So I'll recommend, you know, getting one of these and recording your own temperatures. To me, the more important factor now is soil moisture than the temperature. I think this is where we have to be very careful. Because if we are not, so to speak, this mudding the seed in, it can lead to some of these issues, you know, in the growing season. Side wild compaction, you know, things that will restrict root growth, you know, and plant development, but also lead to long-term soil impact, soil compaction issues, right? What is too wet to plant? You know, again, a lot of this is practically, you know, going at the planting depth and trying to see, you know, if the conditions are looking okay. Or I have this figure here, you know, that sort of gives you the optimal moisture range for a given soil type. So getting a cheap soil moisture sensor to record some of these data probably is a good way to go about it. All right, so that was the planting time and planting conditions, right? So the number two factor I want to talk about is other management, right? It doesn't simply stop at just get things in ground on time, right? How about other factors, right, that you all are thinking? And I've shown you this curve before. So our goal is how to bend this curve, so to speak, right? How to improve benefit of early planting, how to minimize yield losses that comes from delayed planting, because we all know that can happen, right? doing that without increasing our input cost. So we are maximizing our ROI, so to speak, right? And there is a long list of factors that you all go through, right, every year. Some of these are already determined, right? Variety selection, maturity, traits you all are picking is already done. We have a lot of data on those aspects, but that's already done. Seed treatment piece is probably already done. Planting method probably as well, but we have talked a little bit about that, right? And there's other decisions that probably other folks have covered. We'll cover a few of these here in the next few slides. Seeding rate to me is one of the most important ones, right? To again develop that canopy and to make sure that we are not increasing our input cost a whole lot. If we start with soybeans, I probably have shown this picture before, you know, shows the ability of a soybean plant to branch out and compensate for a relatively low stand, right? As we go to these low populations, the plant is able to branch out, right? And increase the yield potential on a per plant basis. And that leads to this sort of a response curve, you know, where to increase yield early on, we do need a lot of plants. But once we reach that 95% yield potential or so, from there going to 99% yield, it takes a lot of extra plants. And if we push higher, we don't gain much, right? So again, this is sort of very different than what we see on the corn side of things. And this leads to some of these data recommendations that we put out. Here I have my seeding rates on the y-axis and different planting times on the x-axis. And these graphs shows you the optimal rates to maximize yield, what we call agronomically optimal rates. And they hover around about 130K to 150K per acre in these early to mid-season planting. And only increase with these very late season planting as we are going beyond mid-June. Notice even for early season planting, we do not have higher seeding rates. Because we are dealing with high yield environments and soybeans, we push them to a lower population in high yield environments. If we look at the economics, you can see those numbers are much lower, right? So again, something to keep in mind if we are maximizing yield versus profits. If we look on the corn side of things, here the story is a little different, you know. It is again determined by the yield environment of the field. And I have these four curves here, right? Anything below 100 bushels, 100 to 50. I believe for most of us in central southern Michigan, we are in this 150 to about 200 bushel range, right? And then very high yield environment. In these high yield environments, you can see this response curve looks very different than soybeans, right? As we push high, we gain, but if we push too high, we start losing. So the optimal to me is about 32 to 34K plants per acre. We have research from Michigan in recent years showing this to be relatively, you know, similar. This is actual number of plants, right? So to go to seeding rate, we can bump it up by 5 to 10%. But keep in mind, if we are trying to maximize profits, these numbers might still be okay because maximum profit is generally 5 to 10% lower. Row spacing is another one that everyone thinks, right? And now we have a lot of data showing that in soybeans, narrow row spacing, 15-inch rows, does benefit. Across the years, you can see 3 years' worth of data here where we had this 6 to 14% yield improvement with narrow row spacing across multiple planting dates. 2022 was the only year where we did not see a yield benefit from narrow rows during this early season planting. We had some crusting issues, and that's where if you have plants close to each other in 15 and 30-inch rows, that potentially can benefit. But in general, we have seen this benefit, and others in other states have seen something similar. On the corn side, the benefit with narrow rows is relatively small. It's 2 to 4%, so relatively small compared to soybeans. Something to keep in mind as we think, you know, equipment for multi-use crop, maybe something for soybeans and another crop like winter wheat can be focused on narrow rows while corn can stay in probably wider rows, right? The last one here I want to talk quickly, again, we don't want to be there, but that is the nature of the game. To develop that canopy, maximize yield potential, If our stand is not looking okay, we might need to be thinking about replanting, right? And we have released new guidelines on the soybean side, how to think through that decision. But quickly again, both for soybean and corn, we need to first assess our stand loss, right? Give it a few days, you know, it probably will look ugly, but give it a few days, assess that stand, look at the pattern of loss, right? And then think about what to do. Replanting is where we have been typically, right? But for beans, we are thinking moving towards this repair planting where we are gap filling instead of replanting the whole field. Or sometimes doing nothing might just be good enough. And that's for soybean. In corn, the story is different. Replanting still benefits because of these other factors, you know, yield potential, yield penalty that comes with the delay planting. We have these detailed guidelines in a fact sheet. If you go to our website, and we can drop a link here in the chat box, there's talks not only about replanting, but also planting technologies, you know, and how they benefit differently in corn versus beans. So to wrap it up again, number one, optimal planting time is very critical while making sure we are planting in the right field conditions, right? Because if we don't, we might get a yield penalty just from that, more so on the corn side than on the soybean side of things. We also need to be thinking about changing other management based on our planting time because that does change as we move in our growing season. Optimal seeding rate is a big one. For soybeans, they do change as we move. For corn, they probably don't, right? The overall goal is in high yield potential environments, how low we can go on the soybean, you know, cut it down by 10, 20, 30%, you know, compared to what you're doing. On the corn side of things, how high we can go, right? And think about narrow rows for soybeans, right? And replanting again, stand uniformity, precise seed placement is more critical in corn than soybean. Because of that, think about repair planting instead of replanting for a crop like soybeans. All of these resources are available on our website, and we'll drop that in the chat box. The main one is this extension tab, and you can go to these specific crops to find all kind of articles, presentations about some of these things that I have talked. All right, thanks. Back to you, Eric.
All right, Jeff is getting his presentation loaded here. We'll move right on to the weather.
Well, good morning, and thanks, Eric and Manny. A little bit quieter morning than we had for many people here yesterday with thunderstorms moving through the area, but we are in an active weather pattern right now. It's a little bit of a change from what we saw during the last week with a lot of warmer than normal conditions. I will start just by noting here, and if you looked at the radar and you were watching yesterday, especially across southern and central lower, there was an awful lot of activity, a lot of warnings. But when we throw all of the damage reports and so forth together, collectively, I think it's some good news. The damage was less than one would typically anticipate with that type of an event. These are the storm reports that we have so far. There's still some coming in, but most of the severe weather yesterday was high winds. There was also some reports of hail, including some 1-inch hail here in the local area in the Lansing, East Lansing area, but that was more the exception than the rule. And you can see it was part of an outbreak to our south and east that occurred yesterday as a cold front moved through the area with them. So in a pretty typical springtime situation with cold air moving into much warmer humid air and the thunderstorms resulting. But again, I think it could have been certainly probably worse than it was. Still some people without power, unfortunately, this morning, but a much quieter day expected here today as we'll look at our forecast in just a moment. For the past week, starting with our temperatures, no surprise here, much above, much warmer than normal once again here for the previous week, with our departures ranging from generally from 8 to as much as 12 degrees Fahrenheit above normal. And a lot of that has been over the last several days, and we've had high temperatures most locations, many locations in the state, at or above 70 degrees. Precipitation depended on where you were, with totals ranging from less than a quarter of an inch across far western sections of the state to more than 2 inches in the east. And a lot of this was, well, there have been two big weather systems that moved through, the one yesterday and then the one previously several days ago. That was mainly across the eastern half of lower Michigan, but widespread rainfall with that one. Change, and it has changed things, certainly in the eastern part of lower Michigan with regard to soil moisture, where some of these heavy rainfall totals have made a significant difference or made it pretty wet once again. I wanted to show something here regarding, and this follows up on many of Manny's comments here and looking at planting. But soil conditions, it's just typical in Michigan, we saw things improve fairly significantly and steadily last week. Several different pieces on here, but on the left hand, upper left hand, these are soil, well, air temperatures in the red line here, and then soil temperatures at 2 inches at our EnviroWeather site in East Lansing here on campus. And you can see that with those 70 degree days, our 2 inch soil temperatures warmed generally from the low 50s up into the mid and upper 50s during the course of the week. So there was a response there. You can see that and that's in the light brown down here below, that's in a bar format, but you can see it lags behind a few hours behind the air temperatures. But there's no question that the soil temperatures did respond with the warm week. And in Michigan, on the upper right hand side here, that leaves us generally, these are average temperatures, 2 inch bare soil temperatures now in many parts of the state in the 50s, even some 60s across. So these were as of yesterday, but and as many this happens many times in Michigan, we are looking at a cooler type of weather pattern here now moving into the next several days and better part of a week. Moisture wise, as usually is the case, and depends on where you are and what soils you're dealing with. But on the bottom here, this is looking at soil moisture in the top 16 inches of the profile nationally. But in Michigan, conditions range from at or maybe even a little bit drier than normal across central and western lower Michigan. Again, with the depends on where, how much precip you had, to wetter than normal. And that's definitely the case as you move into east central and southeastern lower Michigan, where the blues show up there. That indicates that, again, the moisture in that top 16 inches is a little bit more or greater than normal. So it just, again, depends on where you are, but we definitely had a response in soil temperatures here this past week with the warm weather. That's not surprising. Now, in terms of the outlook, we are in an active weather pattern here, at least for the next day or so. We had the precipitation with the system that went through yesterday was actually somewhat less. The individual storms were moving fairly quickly, so most areas got something on the order of a quarter of an inch. There were some heavier totals embedded in that, but most areas did not see quite as much as they normally might with a weather system like that. But that said, we have a third weather system that's approaching here from the last week. That's off to our south and west. You can see it on the weather map here down over south central Kansas. It's an area of low pressure with an associated frontal boundary that will make its way towards us during the day today, but mainly tonight, overnight, and into early tomorrow morning. So for most areas, we'll see variably cloudy skies here today, a little bit cooler than it was yesterday, breezy. Another windy day is expected here, but we'll see rain develop here by the southwest corner, probably very late afternoon, but most areas here this evening, and especially late evening into the overnight hours. Looking at for most areas here, probably a quarter to half an inch across, let's call it roughly the southern two-thirds of the state, a little bit less than that as you go north into upper Michigan. But this will be a fairly widespread rain. Most areas will get, and it will be sort of a steady rain. There might be a couple of embedded rumbles of thunder here and there, but this is not any kind of a, nothing like what we saw yesterday, but generally a nice steady rain that will last for several hours. And then tonight, this is the weather map for 8 p.m. tonight. You can see the low pressure gets close here. Central Illinois, that's when we'll really start to see that precip move southwest to northeast across the state. And by tomorrow morning, the front goes through, the system goes off to our east, and it's replaced by high pressure. So tomorrow, we will see cooler conditions behind that front, and even cooler than that on Saturday. This is a Canadian origin air mass, so it will be noticeably cooler and windy, as well as there's a lot of differences in pressure between the high and the low pressure, so it will be yet again another very, very windy day. Exception to most areas will be dry northern parts of the state, we could still see some lingering showers, especially across upper Michigan. And it could be in liquid form. It also could be cold enough that a few snowflakes to mix in. That will probably come to an end, though, by late tomorrow or early Saturday at the latest. But we are looking definitely at a cooling trend over the next 2 days. And then finally on Saturday, this is a little bit different map format here. High pressure across the state, but that cold air mass is in place. We will see, it's important to note here, even though we're a little early, haven't had much planted yet, but we will see frost and freezing temperatures, especially across northern parts of the state here, beginning tonight and then continuing into the weekend. And especially, I think Sunday morning will be the coldest morning of all these, especially if we look across central and southern parts of the state. Probably we'll see some temperatures down around freezing. We're not expecting a really widespread hard freeze type of condition, but definitely northern parts of state away from the lakes, we probably will see some upper 20s there, and more low and mid 30s as we head south. But certainly, I think Sunday morning with relatively clear, calm conditions expected overnight, we probably will see quite a bit of frost out there. Just a heads up for it's, and certainly that is well within our climatology. We expect that this time of the year. It's not unusual at all for the third week or so in April, but that we will have that threat over the weekend before warming. Another little bit of a warming trend sets up by late Sunday and into Monday in the next week. But that said, next week, looking at the medium range forecast guidance. Oh, here's the forecast minimum temperatures here for Sunday, the 21st. This again probably will be the coldest morning of all, and you can see most areas here again ranging from the upper 20s in the northern part of the interior upper peninsula down into the low 30s, maybe a couple upper 20s in some inland areas in northern Michigan, northern lower Michigan as well. But that's probably going to be the coldest morning, possibly a little bit remaining on Monday morning, but then warmer after that. Precip over the next week here, after the precipitation here tonight and tomorrow, most areas remaining dry until the early part of next week. So the next chance for significant precip right now looks like it would be late Monday or Tuesday. Right now, probably fairly high confidence that that will be another fairly widespread type precip event, but that's timing wise what we'll be looking for the next one. And then that will drag a little bit more, or another cooler air mass into the area, into the region. And so we're expecting next week will be somewhat unsettled and probably cooler than normal with a gradual moderating trend and warmer as we get towards the end of the weekend. And that's what here I'll end up or start to wrap up here. Looking at the medium range forecast guidance, it does, the jet stream forecast suggest a pretty much a transitional type of flow, progressive pattern. So we don't stay in any one place very long, but ultimately, most of this guidance suggests that by late next week and the following week for the end of April, early May, that we start to see troughing out in the west and ridging over the east. We've seen that pattern many times here over the last several weeks and even months. And what that means ultimately is that we'll probably go back to warmer than normal conditions here by the last week of the month. Fairly good confidence in that. Note also down in the lower right-hand side here also suggests a fairly active storm track through the middle of part of the country. So precip is predicted or expected to be at least normal, if not even above normal. So again, if we look at this in terms of the time of the year, the calendar, and what needs to be done, it's not the ideal forecast, but at least again, the temperatures probably will be on the increase. I think that's the most the biggest one of the biggest messages here, but we're going to have to use those opportunity windows when they arise, because this one we think about the last few days. And again, there were opportunities there just at the very beginning of things. And now Mother Nature's given us a little bit of a curveball with this recent change, but it's temporary. And so after several days, again, I think things will gradually improve by the latter part of next week, at least in terms of temperature. One last thing with that, and you probably have noticed this, but when we have our high temperatures up above 70 degrees with a nice breeze and some good sunshine during the day, The evaporation rates are higher than they typically are in the spring, and that does make a definite difference in terms of that topsoil condition and how fast it dries off or allows traffic or allows operations to begin. So keep an eye on that. We probably will see some of that once again here, especially as we get towards the latter part of next week and beyond. And so that's a wrap up here. We are back to a pretty unsettled pattern, certainly cooler for the short term, but then with a the long-term moderation in temperatures after that. And we'll have some new long lead outlooks here for next week that will I'm not expecting any big changes, but we'll have a look at that on the next briefing. And so with that, I'm going to introduce next week's speaker. And it's one some of you may have met, may have not, but it's Abby Smith from USDA's NRCS. She's our state agronomist, and she's going to be with us to talk about conservation practices for soil health. And that's next Thursday morning, the 25th of April. So don't miss that. And with that, I'm going to hand it off to Phil to talk about RUP. Thanks.
And I'm going to turn it back over to Eric.
All right, thanks, Phil. All right, folks, we've got about 20 minutes left, so we've got plenty of time for questions. We've only got one so far. So for either Manny or Jeff, or if you've got a question about another topic for maybe one of the other specialists, feel free to drop that in as well. So for those of you who are attending this morning, obviously, you caught hopefully most of the presentations, but if you wanted to go back and re-look at one of the topics, we are posting all of our recordings in a number of different places, and you see those on the screen on our Fieldcraft website. I've also got the podcast posted on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. So lots of different opportunities. And if you're not sure about any of that, just contact one of your local extension educators and we can get you hooked up with all of our recordings. So I'm going to start things off with a question from the chat. This is for Manny. So Manny, I've talked with a handful of folks who have not planted any soybean, but know of others who have planted soybean. Somebody is actually planting in February. That was interesting. But this question is actually on planting in March. So for those beans that were planted in March, can you talk a little bit about how they handle these fluctuations in temperature and moisture as we've kind of gone through our spring here?
Yeah, so planted in March. That's yeah. So to me, I think the most critical piece is we were talking about that imbibitional injury, right? The soil temperature piece of it. That's most critical when you're putting beans in ground. If you're putting beans in ground when the temperature is very cold, that's where I think you are more susceptible to injury and loss in stand, right? Planting into cold soil is worse than even getting a rain, a few hours after. So I think it depends what the conditions were when the crop was planted back in March, right? Were the soil temperatures hovering, higher than mid-40s? Because that first 12, 20 hours, I think that's the most critical piece. And if that was the case, then, the later time is little less sensitive. I think the seed can survive through it, but planting in March, man, that's a long time, like for the seedling to emerge. And again, depends on how many growing degree days we have accumulated since then, right? So to me, the most sensitive is the first few, those of 12, 24 hours. And if they were not planted in right conditions, I think chances are that we are going to get poor emergence because of imbibitional injury. If that was okay, then these fluctuations probably are going to have an impact. It's just more stress on the plant and emerging seedling, right? Is my thought there. But it might not be as bad as if you planted into cold and wet soil, right? So I think fluctuations will play a role, and the longer the seed is in ground before emerging, I think the worse the stand loss might be, right? But again, soybeans are pretty forgiving. We have seen, I think, year in, year out, at least with the early to mid-April planting. I have not had a chance to look at, March plantings, but they can, come out okay. And even if we have relatively, low standard replanting, we were talking about that, right? That threshold is down in like about 60,000 plants or so. If they are relatively well distributed and if there are big gaps, go back and repair plant them. So I think that's what I can say. I don't know if Jeff has anything to add.
No, other than we've had some fairly major fluctuations in that soil temp. That's a tricky thing in March, but this year, as most people, this season, as most people realize, our soil temperatures were significantly warmer than they are in a typical late winter, early spring situation in Michigan, and that led to everything really beginning. It, certainly, in terms of anything that was over there over the winter. We started up early this year because of the abnormally mild temperatures. But that recently we've seen more normal conditions, but we're still warmer than we typically are now at this time of the year.
And one thing I will add is I think because of these fluctuations, I typically don't want to plant too shallow. There's that thought out there. If you're planting early, plant shallow so the seed comes out of ground quicker. These fluctuations, I think, throw a curveball there. I think you want some sort of protection. That's where ideal planting depth, I believe, is still critical to sort of shield the seed away from some of these fluctuations.
So one of the farmers I was talking with, he said he had planted early and had dug up some seed and it had germinated, hadn't cracked yet. How long, if we had an aggressive seed treatment, how long can we expect that to last?
Yeah, that's a good one. We do again, I think with these early planting non-ideal conditions, putting a seed treatment probably is a good insurance policy. How long they can last, I don't know. We have planted in let's say like April, end of April 25th or so, and the seedlings emerged almost a month after. I think that was about 3 years ago. So we have seen that anywhere from 25 to 30 days. We were thinking, oh, nothing is going to come up. We might need to replant. And then, boom, we had a pretty decent stand. So that's what I have seen from 25 up to 30 days. Longer than that, I have heard reports, folks, planting in March, even early April, where the stand was okay. It can go longer, but I think that can probably depend on what sort of fluctuations you're getting. And I think soil moisture is a big one. If we get too wet, I think that probably can make things worse.
All right, thanks. So we've got a handful of questions that have come in, so that's good. Manny, what population is best for 30-inch rows? And I'm just going to assume that we're talking about soybeans here.
Okay, so yeah, seeding rates. So the data I was showing you, that was coming, most of it was coming from 15-inch rows. And 15-inch rows, our recommendation is now around 130K plants. It used to be a little higher than that, 150 or so. And the work we have been doing over the last 3 years, I believe now, we are comparing that the two row spacing, seeding rates, even planting times. We have not seen much differences between the narrow and wide row spacing. So for a typical field, typical planting time, I probably would stick to that 130K number. If you are a little less risk taker, bump it up to maybe 140, a max of 150. But I think that's the range, 130 plus minus 110 or 20K, I think is a good sweet spot for these timely planting conditions, right? When the planting gets delayed into June, that's where we really need to start bumping it up. And I think that's where bumping up more than 15 inches is beneficial than 30. So yeah.
Okay. And here's a question from Dave, and it's kind of similar that we're talking about soybeans here again. Population differences or adjustments to make from, he says 30-inch rows to 30-inch, but I think we're talking about 30 versus 15.
15.
General narrow rows, what are your thoughts for early versus late planting?
So yeah, I think that's what I was talking about. The recommendation used to be, if you go in 15-inch rows, you have more linear footage, right? So in theory, you can fit more plants. We have not really seen that pan out. And I think some other states, my colleagues have seen something similar now. The recommendation used to be in 15 inches. We can go a little higher than what we are planting at 30 inches. But I think with these new genetics, with these semi-determinate plants, you know, that can branch out, the numbers are relatively similar at this point, unless we are in delayed planting conditions, right? So that's where the early versus late planting comes into equation, you know. I have seen again one location we had this crusting issue, and that's where, you know, having more plants close to each other technically can help. So if you have a soil, you know, that's prone to crusting, you know, heavier ground, less residue, you know, things like that, bumping up the population a little bit more in narrow rows potentially can help with that issue, right? That the plants are working together to push through that crust, that technically can happen. So in these unique scenarios, I think there is a potential to change things. But in a typical condition, you know, I think between 15 and 30, there isn't much difference. Starting with that 130 to 150 for, you know, early in the season, and bumping it up to 150 to 180 as we move into June, I think that's a good practice. Getting it final, what's the final goal, right? And that's the 100,000 care plants, you know, that's still a good rule of thumb. Technically, it can be lower than that. I think our research has shown that even if we have well-spaced plants at 70 to 80K, you know, per acre, that's plenty. But I think 100K is a good target. How do we get there? That's where the seeding rate comes into play, right? And that's where some of these late conditions getting more does benefit with canopy closure and getting a decent yield potential.
And circling back on the seed treatment question, Chris DeFonso, our entomologist, says that for neonic seed treatments, 30 to 40 days is what they can expect for aphids, and that starts the minute that seed hits the ground. So 30 to 40 days. Here's an interesting question. With a few acres, I've wondered about working heat into the ground with tillage on warm days. What are your thoughts? And Jeff, maybe you can chime in on that as well.
Manny, would you like me to start or
Yeah,
to comment
sure.
it?
If you have
Okay, it's
any thoughts,
this
yeah.
is and this is one of those. It's really dependent upon the situation because we're talking about really some applied soil physics here and how to get. I'm assuming that the aim is to maybe enhance the heating. To do that, you've got to figure out a way of getting the heat from the surface where it starts down into the soil profile. And that's essentially the mission or goal here. And the big issue, surprisingly for some, but it isn't for others, it's how much water is in there. But water takes up an incredible amount as a huge sink and so, of well it, but it also conducts energy downward in the soil profile. So you've got to look at a combination both of your air temperatures and the sunshine above the surface, which is where the heat comes from initially, and then it moves down into the soil. And how fast is it? How quickly does it move? Anything that slows down the rate of transfer downward into the soil is going to keep the temperatures at depth cooler than they would be otherwise. And the big one is how much water is in the soil. And even though it does, water does consume energy when it evaporates, and of course causes cooling, the addition of water also makes the thermal conductivity of the soil higher. And so with a moist soil, we actually get more of the heat overall passing vertically downward into the soil profile and thereby keep. So it seems a little counterintuitive sometimes, and the texture can matter here. Of course, the texture determines how much water is in there to begin with. Another issue is what's on the top of the soil. Do you have residue there? Is it bare soil? Anything you can do to reduce the reflectivity or reflectance of that surface is also going to make a difference. So the less reflective it is, the more of the incoming solar it's going to absorb, and the more heat that you're going to have there. So it's a little bit of a tricky thing. And I would say overall, what we have observed over the years is that some of those you win, you can actually help by maybe some minimum tillage. Typically, if you have a say you ran a some kind of a tiller across the top, you typically aerate the soil and you actually reduce the amount of conductivity of the heat going in, and thereby you keep the bottom of the soil cooler, or the soil at depth cooler, whereas the top of soil also cools off more as well. So people who look or have to worry about frost freezing conditions here, largely that this is one of the games that they play each spring, each season with cold temperatures. But there's a lot of factors here, and overall, it's not easy to do without a lot of money or a lot of big investment to change the color of the soil, that type of thing. There are limited options, I guess, is what I would sum it. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's probably, I think you wrapped it up pretty good. I don't think I have too much to add. It's a difficult thing to do, right? If we are dealing with cold soils, yeah, going with the tillage, on a good day, and I think soil moisture is a big part of, because again, if you're trying to till when it's still wet out there, compaction is a big piece of it, right? You might not get heat into the ground, but you might end up creating that soil compaction layer out there, right? So I think that's the only other thing I will add in there.
Thank you. So, Manny, I've got somebody who would like you to put back up the corn population slide.
Okay,
So, while you're kind of looking
let's
for
do
that,
that.
I'm going to ask you another question so you can multitask.
Awesome.
7.5-inch drilled beans. I think you mostly focused on 15s and 30s. Any comments on 7.5s?
7.5-inch beans. We have looked into this recently. Going back to the idea of, seed placement, how much of a role that plays, and is there a benefit going to narrower than 15 inches? We have not, so we have limited data on it, and as of now, we have not seen a benefit or a yield decline going from 15 to 7.5. So yeah, I think there's a potential there. Again, comes back to the equipment availability side of things, right? I think soybeans seem to care less about the optimal seed placement, that you might not be able to achieve with the drill. If you were using a precision planter to plant in 7.5, that I don't know the answer to that. Is it too narrow? Is there a benefit there? We are actually looking into that, planting beans in 10-inch rows now. But I think as of now, the data we have is it doesn't really harm your yield potential. You might need to bump up your seeding rate just a little because of that non-ideal seed placement, right? That's the other piece there, that you might need to increase it by 10, 20K to account for that issue. Other than that, I think it's okay to go with that, especially if it gives you a chance to plant on time, right? Again, because delayed planting penalty to me is the more important piece here, rather than achieving a more uniform seed placement.
Got somebody who's maybe going to try to push the envelope here. How about a 4.0 bean in the thumb? How do you think
Four
Michigan
point. Who?
temperature would handle that?
Yeah, 4.0 in the thumb. That's, I believe, pushing it. So we have a lot of data. I didn't talk about the maturity group today, and I'll be more than happy, if this person contacts me directly. We have a lot of data looking at this interaction of maturity group with the planting date. We have pushed maturity groups at least here in Lansing area, and I think even in at the SEVRAC out in Richville Research Station, we have gone up to 3.5. And be able to make it, I think we did get frosted 1 year. So 4.0 in the thumb, I believe, is pushing it. If you are able to, if you have some ground, where you can plant early by end of April or so, I think you can push up to 3.5 or so. But 4.0, and yeah, I think that's pushing it a little too much. We are, again, one thing we didn't talk about that, and I don't know if Jeff can comment. We are getting a little bit extended planting, our planting, growing season, right? Little delay in our fall frost as well over the years. So yeah, that's giving us the potential to push these maturities, but I think we have to be careful, maybe not pushing it too much. I would try to stay, I think, around 3.5, and that to me is pushing it a little bit, unless you are planting really early. So we have recommended here in Lansing area, if you're planting early, you can push up to 3.5. For thumb area, I would probably stay like 3-2, 3-2, 3-3, you know, up to 3-5.
Okay. Oh, and Bill
Do you?
Cates is up in the thumb as well. He also mentioned that that pretty much echoed what you just said, Manny. I am going to switch gears here and see if there are any other specialists or educators on the call this morning that have anything to add. Dennis had put something into the chat about wheat and some freezing temperatures. Dennis, if you're able to unmute, you can go ahead and share that and any other updates.
Eric, did you see my slide? Yeah, I thought you had a question on corn seeding rate.
I
Did you
think
see
he
it?
just wanted to see it
Oh,
again.
just wanted to see it. Okay. And you guys can see it, right? Okay, thanks.
Yeah, I put the comment. I've had a few questions about frost injury to wheat because we are in the jointing stage, which means that growing point is now above the soil surface. So we don't have that buffering effect of the soil with compared to air temperatures. So in the jointing stage, we can tolerate down to 24 degrees Fahrenheit for 2 hours before we start seeing yield damage. If we were a little further along, like our friends to the south, we have some growers in our YEN program in Kentucky that are heading out right now. If this frost was to extend down into their neck of the woods, they would be in trouble, depending on how long that frost, because I think Jeff had forecasted down to 29, 30 in some locations. If we were heading and we got down that cold for a couple of hours, we'd have some damage from frost. So, but right now, if with tolerance down to 24, I think most of Michigan, at least over the weekend here, is going to be okay in terms of frost.
Thanks, Dennis. Any other specialists on this morning have any comments for us?
Eric, there's a question down there about rolling wheat this year. Yeah, I've had a lot of questions about it, and a lot of people are rolling wheat for various reasons. Honestly, the biggest reason I've heard people rolling wheat is because they don't want to pick rocks, and it pushes the rocks down so they can run their header closer to the ground because they're going to bale straw off. The key with rolling wheat is you got to get it done early. And ideally, you want to do it while the wheat is still in Feek's growth stage three, which is the tillering phase. So once those stems start to become pseudo-erect, any damage you do to the plant at that point is just damage to the plant. It will not respond. If you roll wheat when it is still tillering, yeah, it'll damage the plant somewhat, and then it'll trigger more tillers to develop. But once you're beyond that tillering stage, there's no benefit to it. So we have seen some positive results in terms of higher number of heads per unit area, as well as a little bit higher yield, but it has to be done early in the spring when it's in that tillering phase yet. So a lot of the people that called me were tillering or that were rolling wheat after the tillering phase. So all they're doing is damage out there.
And Dennis, I would add that like if your wheat is timely planted, and you probably already have enough fall tillers, you don't want any more spring tillers, right? So even if you might get tillering, that's probably not what you want, right? Because those are not going to be as productive as well, right?
Yes, that's
So,
correct. And yeah, you wouldn't need to roll wheat to try to stimulate tillering if you got planted on time. Correct. Yes, exactly.
All right, I've got a question about beans on beans with limited acres, sand, higher cost of planting, corn with limited yield potential. Any thoughts on going soybean after soybean?
Beans on beans. So there is a yield penalty, right? With the crop rotation piece, you know, you're building up pest pressure. I don't know if Marty is on. I think you have to be careful with your disease pressure more than anything else, right? And if you had a soybean cyst nematode, I think that's a big one that can really limit yield in beans on beans. So yeah, making sure you actually get a test for SCN in your field. I think that to me is limiting. Making sure you have the right seed treatment, you know, you're keeping up with scouting to make sure that you don't have any in-season disease, you know, to limit your yield potential. I think that's critical to minimize the pest pressure. There, I think I've seen some research looking into, you know, is there a benefit of adding some extra nitrogen, you know, because soybeans are very heavy users of nitrogen, you know, second year is probably a lot. I don't know if there's any conclusive data out there benefiting, you know, adding some nitrogen at R1 20 pounds or something like that. I think the main one is making sure that your pest pressure is limited and you don't have a high population of SCN. Picking the right variety, you know, all of that is part of the management. I think if you're going with that management.
All right, great. So thank you again, Manny and Jeff. Great presentations this morning. And thank you to everyone who put questions in. That really helps us to, you know, keep things interactive and moving. So we're going to wrap that up for today. Thanks everyone for joining. Again, you saw who's going to be presenting next week. Hope you can join next week and hope you all have a great Thursday.